In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I update you on our projects, Hittail, Drip, Microconf, and Audit Shark. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 174. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Mike?
I was on a Bootstrapper's website, and they linked to a Chrome plugin called Momentum. I love this plugin already. I mean, what it does is you install it, and whenever you open up a new tab, it gives you this, like, a photorealistic background of some picture that's been taken someplace in the world, and it tells you what time it is. And then when you first open it on any given day, it asks you what your main priority for that day is. So then you type it in, and the rest of the day, whenever you open up a new tab, it will remind you that that is your main priority today. And it essentially has acted as like a deterrent for me wasting time going and doing, you know, like just browsing news sites or Hacker News or anything like that. It's really cool. I'd really recommend it to anybody. But it also gives like an inspirational quote and tells you like what the temperature is outside. Today's quote is, "Never let your fear decide your fate."
That's a really cool plugin. I love the idea that you enter your goal and then it basically keeps shoving your goal in your face all day. That's a nice feature.
It's awesome. And I've only been using it for about 2 days now. I love it.
Cool. Hey, have you seen that video on YouTube? It's called Facebook Fraud, but a guy lays out a really interesting case on how buying Facebook clicks to get more likes on your page is kind of a racket.
Yeah, I did.
The video is really well done, and I love the guy's presentation style. It's just kind of matter of fact. He talks through all the arguments of how Facebook is the clicks to get likes by paying the whatever it is, 30 cents or 50 cents a click, are worth about as much as if you just go and pay a click farm like in the Philippines or in India. You know, you can pay a tiny amount of money. I think it's a penny a click in order to get people to like, and that those are basically almost equivalent. Now, I thought all that was cool. The problem I had with it is I kept seeing people posting it with the name. It wasn't Facebook Fraud, but it was like one person posted it with "A Case for the Uselessness of Advertising on Facebook" or "Facebook Ads Don't Work." When I saw that title, I clicked through because I'm like, how is this going to play out? But it's only talking about buying likes on your page. So if you don't buy likes on your page, then this thing isn't really that relevant to you, right? It's not some catastrophic damnation of buying ads on Facebook, because obviously a lot of us do well with Facebook ads. If you're selling software and you're sending your clicks off of Facebook onto your website and you're getting people to buy your product, then obviously it's a very different approach than what this guy was talking about.
I mean, unless you're involved in internet marketing, you probably don't necessarily understand the subtle nuances of what you actually do with Facebook advertising. So people look at that and they'll see this video and they'll say, oh, Facebook advertising doesn't work. But having never gone in there and looked at it, they don't realize that there's like several different ways that you can advertise and there's different things that you can try to get people to do. So if you've never done it before, you're going to see that video and say, oh, Facebook advertising is this giant scam and fraud, and that's not what it's saying. It's saying that this particular thing is no different than using a link farm. And yeah, that's right.
I think that he says it's like, it isn't much better. Like, you're paying a lot more and it's only a little bit better. So, you know, there's been stuff about this, about Google AdWords having all this click fraud, all these weird, or I guess it was AdSense, right? So it's if you're placing ads through AdWords, that people would have ads on their website through AdSense and then hire folks to click them. And yeah, that's happened. And people a few years ago said, oh, Google's done. This was going to ruin Google, that they were just doomed. And yet here they are, you know, inventing flying cars. I'm not saying that you should dismiss something like this, but really think about the grand implications of this and how much of an impact it actually has on Facebook and really on our efforts as, you know, as marketers. So what's going on with you in terms of Audit Shark stuff?
I'm in the middle of testing out removing the credit card requirement from the sign-up page. I haven't fully fleshed out exactly how I'm going to be working everything and kind of following people through, but really what I'm trying to do with it is I'm trying to get people in there and actually using the product so that I can get information from them. And I understand that like there's going to be this large number of people who are not necessarily interested in it. They're just going to sign up because it's a free sign-up at this point. But what I'm interested in doing is finding out information from them about, one, why they came in to begin with, kind of what that messaging was that drew them in and got them to the point where they wanted to sign up, and then find out from them why they're not interested, so I can essentially find out what the disqualifiers are, because I want to know why the product doesn't apply to them.
And the idea is to get 5 to 10 times more people, because that's typically what it amounts to if you remove credit card, 5 to 10 times more people into your app so that you can get more feedback, even realizing that maybe 80% of it is going to be less qualified than someone who would have entered their credit card.
And I'm not really concerned about the people who are coming in and the fact that I know that 80% of those people, I'm going to get information from them. They're going to say, oh, well, I didn't need it because of X, Y, and Z. And that's good to know, because it means that other people who have those X, Y, and Z requirements, those are going to be bad qualifiers as well. And I can find out what language they might have used and then use additional language to essentially push those people away in the future. So if I ever go back to asking for a credit card, which I assume I will do at some point, but I really just want to get those people in there and find out what those disqualifiers are so I can call those things out to kind of push those people further away.
I am less excited about this idea. Like, I'm a pretty big proponent of having credit card up front. And the times when I've seen folks not have credit card up front is when they either are way early on and they don't have enough customers like you're doing. Typically, it's folks who don't know what they're doing, or it's someone who's way far along, like, let's say, a MailChimp or, you know, a SaaS app that is growing and they know their funnel so well that they're doing this as a test. And they also have things in place where they're going to basically have kind of an inside sales team where you don't even need to enter a credit card, but they basically have folks inside who are either making phone calls or they're doing quite a few highly tactical emails that really bring folks into the fold, get them onboarded, and get them experiencing value. Because if you're getting that 5 to 10 times the prospects, you don't need to close all of them for it to be substantially more profitable for you. But you do have to have a ton of stuff in place, and you really have to know your ideal customer in order to even close enough of them to make the non-credit card piece work. I've tended to say I would always default towards having credit card up front. You're deviating from that at this point, and the reason is because you want to do more learning right now. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm probably giving up revenue in order to gain that knowledge. But the problem is that, like, I don't necessarily know what I don't know. So I want to get people in there who are not well qualified to learn from those people so that in the future, any messaging, like, I don't want to attract the wrong people inadvertently later on. So right now, I'm only attracting a certain type of person with my messaging. And what I want to do is to get everyone in there and then from there find out who essentially falls out because they're not a good fit and talk to as many of them as I can so that I can learn what is the good messaging that brings people in, what is the bad messaging that brings people in, and how do I kind of guide people through that funnel. And it's all about, like, learning what things I don't know at this point.
I think personally, I'm skeptical, but I always have an open mind to stuff like this, because if you go through this and you find out that, you know, you learn a ton and you wind up with a couple value propositions that you wouldn't have otherwise learned, then you go back to asking for credit card. I'm open to this being kind of a tactic early on, that if you launch something and that credit card field is basically keeping too many people out, or you're just not getting enough signups that you can't learn anything, you know, maybe this is a tactic that people can use. Maybe you can prove it out with this approach. It's not something that I've had to go through.
So what about you? What's going on with Hittail?
Man, such a big weight off my shoulders. You know the revamp that I've been talking about around Google's not provided, where they don't no longer send keywords to your website? Finally got that live, like a soft launch last week to existing customers. And it was just kind of an innocuous link where you could activate Google keywords. I didn't tell anyone about it. I just wanted a few people to try it. And then yesterday I rolled it so that all brand new Hittail trials, that's all they see now. They're basically dumped onto an onboarding page that says, let's get you connected to your Google Webmaster Tools account. And there's no more tracking code. There's no more JavaScript. There's, you know, no more real-time traffic, because that's not necessary now. The real value prop that Hittail has always had is provide keywords and then provide suggestions based on those keywords. And with a direct link into Google Webmaster Tools, like Hittail now does, there's no reason for you to have actual, like, tracking code on your site anymore. So it's been an interesting 24 hours. There's already been 100 people who have activated it. If you don't know, if you add your website into Google Webmaster Tools, you can see a bunch of information about it. And in there, buried somewhere, are the keywords people are using to find your website. And so this is the information that they've pulled out of, you know, analytics. You can't get that anymore. And so Hittail now, on a weekly basis, will go into, assuming you give us permission, will automatically go into Google Webmaster Tools. We pull those keywords into our database. We run our algorithm algorithm on it, and then we rank them on a 1 to 5 scale of these are the keywords that you should target. That part is done, and it really feels good to have that going because new trials have continued to come in. At this point, I feel like they can actually get the value out of it that they were getting. And frankly, even a little bit more, like I'm super stoked. I ran it on my own sites, and it's giving me insight that the old Hittail wouldn't give you because the old Hittail said it's a suggestion or it's not. Whereas now it ranks them on a 1 to 5 star level. And so I'm reverse ordering, and I've already started ordering articles through Hittail that I'm going to be publishing on a few of my sites.
That's really cool. So does that decrease the server requirements? Because I know before you used to have some pretty serious issues with...
That's right.
At least initially when you first took over the product. I mean, you had all those issues with the server just... It couldn't cope with some of the things that it needed to do.
That's right. Yeah, it was getting like 20 to 40 inserts per second, which isn't that much if you're running Node.js and you're using Redis, but this thing is using, you know, 13-year-old classic ASP over a SQL Server database. It's a lot of disk I.O. Yes, over time, that will decrease. I still have this big customer base of people who are using the tracking code. So it doesn't go away overnight. Those people, I'm not going to like kick them out of the tracking code usage. I'm just going to let that peter out. But once I start emailing customers, I'm probably going to email 100 at a time starting next week. I'll email 100 and just say, look, this is the direction Hittail's going in order to provide, you know, maximum benefit from Google. Just link it up to your Google Webmaster Tools account. It'll download them and do the things. Hopefully over time, people will uninstall that tracking code and basically stop using that side of it. And then, as you said, I can dramatically reduce my hosting costs because hosting cost is, yeah, it is about $800 or $900 a month.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it feels good, man. It was, you know, it took a lot longer than I thought, but I think these things always do. How about you? What else is going on?
The desktop edition that I've been working on for Audit Shark. Mm-hmm. The development for that is actually going really, really well at this point. I was able to give an initial demo of it within the past couple of days to a security analyst. That went really, really well. He looked at it and he understood the value of it, and like just immediately, he just kind of watched me go through it. And you know, you can point it to any machine on the network. You don't even need an agent installed. And he's just looking at it saying, wow, he was just totally blown away by it. And I've showed a few other people as well. And as soon as they see that, like the value proposition for Audit Shark becomes much more clear. And I need to figure out how to take some of those screenshots and create a screencast or something like that of the desktop edition and put it on the website to help make the value proposition more clear and why you would use that. Because I don't think that the messaging on the website is particularly clear. It's technically accurate, but I don't think that it's clear.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you, is how is the desktop edition going to help you sell more Audit Shark?
It works very, very well as a demo for what the product is capable of. And then essentially the cloud version of it is you take the things that you've built in the desktop edition and you load them into the cloud. And then the cloud basically acts as your scheduler.
Yep.
So it's basically you're building the scripts with the desktop edition and then you're loading them into the cloud, and the cloud runs them in the background on a scheduled basis. You know, you can run them on the desktop edition, just not really on a scheduled basis.
Right.
It just gives you a much more interactive view of everything that's going on. So when you're going through and you're developing it, you can do things very, very quickly. You can iterate on things that you're building versus in the cloud edition, you really can. There's a much higher latency, I'll say, so you don't see things right away. It would be like taking Visual Studio and putting it into a web page, I'll say.
Right. Well, no, and that makes sense. I mean, that's from a feature perspective, that makes sense. But how does it, I know it's a better way to do it, but is it because there are people who won't buy Audit Shark without this? Or is it because a paying customer is going to cancel unless you build it? What brought you there? What brought you to building a desktop app?
It's always been in the roadmap to have a desktop edition, and I just haven't gotten there yet. Right now, I'm talking to a prospect who they basically told me flat out that they need something like that that will work offline because they have networks that are completely disconnected. They're not on the internet and they don't have a way to get the information that they need. So that reduces them to doing everything manually because they don't have software in place that can do it. The desktop edition allows them to do that stuff in an offline manner that my cloud edition just simply can't do.
Got it. So you do have a prospect. That's
yes.
What you're saying. If you're listening to this and you're early on in your product, or you're thinking, boy, you know, you should be focusing on how to get revenue. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say is at this point, even, you know, with the stuff I'm building, I rarely build a feature unless either a customer has requested it and I think they might cancel, or I think it applies to a lot of customers, or a prospect has requested it and I think they're not going to, you know, continue with their trial or sign up, or if we haven't built it, or if it's something that I really think is going to differentiate us in the market and really allow me to kind of change the core value prop of the app. Because I think adding one more feature, you know, some people will just add multi-user support, add, you know, other random stuff that you can think of. But just adding a list of features on your website doesn't sell any more of it, right? It comes down to actively expanding the value prop or having people who already know about it who are waiting on something. And I guess that's what you've clarified, is that you have someone who you think is not going to buy unless you build this thing. And it's been on the roadmap for a while.
Right.
And these are enterprise, I assume, if you're talking to them. Yeah.
Yes.
So one thing I wanted to bring up, I've just gone through probably a month of pressure, like putting too much pressure on myself. I set up these goals for 2014, and as always happens, things come up. The Hittail stuff took a lot longer than I thought it would, and I'm behind on most of my goals for 2014. And I take that really hard, and I started working longer and longer nights. I started thinking about work more, and I basically stopped enjoying what I was doing. I was feeling a lot of stress, but the only reason is because I want to basically live up to these goals that I've set up for myself that are not critical. You know, when I took my retreat a couple weeks ago, I took a step back and I said that I need to back off on the kind of the time famine, I think is what I've been feeling, of like, I don't have time to do anything because I'm just rushing around and I'm late with everything and I can't respond to all my emails. And I actually wrote down in my notebook, like, be thankful. And I wrote down all these things I was thankful for. Now, the funny thing was, is the week or two after I come back from my retreat, I'm listening to Bootstrap with Kids, and Breck Palumbo said almost the exact same thing, that he went out on his retreat and that he realized that he has a lot more to be thankful for than he doesn't. But it's easy to get caught up in these almost, they're goals, but it's almost this false pressure that you put on yourself. And so I've been working the last couple of weeks to fight against that self-imposed kind of stress and really trying to enjoy the journey more. I mean, shit, this is the life that I built for myself, right? You have apps that you're working on. This is fun. This is what we're all supposed to love doing. And yet at times, I think it's pretty easy for me to wander away from that sense of just how cool it is.
It's interesting that while you seem to have been going down the direction of getting down on yourself and having all these things to do and working more hours to try and catch up, I've actually kind of gone in the other direction where I've started working less hours, and it's actually helped me because then I'm a lot more focused during the time that I am working and I'm sleeping better at night and I'm not thinking about work as much. And I find that the more I think about work, the worse it actually gets. Mm-hmm. I've definitely been there.
Well, that's good to hear. And I mean, I would wish for everyone.
I found that not sleeping well, it's one of those snowball effects. Losing weight, I feel like it's the same thing. It's very much a snowball effect where as you start the process, like you lose a few pounds and then you lose more and more and it becomes easier. However, if you start gaining weight, that's a snowball in the other direction. It just gets worse and worse than it is to try and reverse directions. Right. And sleep is one of those things where if you're not getting enough sleep, then your whole day just suffers and is wrecked because of it. For my best productivity hours are between probably 6 a.m. and noon. And I hate getting up early. I can't stand it. But if I do, I get so much done and I'm so productive and like I'm very amped up and ready to get that stuff done. And then I'm ready to go to sleep earlier, which means I can get up early again the next day.
I agree with you on the snowball thing with sleep because that's been part of it. And I've been waking up at weird hours of the night. When your sleep's interrupted like that, you're just not at full force. And then I was drinking a bunch of caffeine during the day, which was then, of course, adds to your, like, clinically, you get more stressed out. You have more anxiety when you do that. Then your sleep's interrupted because you don't sleep as well. So it's totally this cycle. And I actually busted it at the start of the year. And really, I went to no coffee, no alcohol for 14 days. And it was purely just something to kind of reset the system. The first 3 days were like rough on both ends. I was just all jacked up. But pretty soon my sleep became, I undid the snowball, basically. To be honest, the other thing that I did, it's funny you say early riser. I've never in my life been an early riser. My peak productivity hours historically have been between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. always, my whole life. I started giving more thought about how little work I get done in the evenings now. I used to always make up the lack of work I would get done in a day. I'd go home and work in the evenings. But now with kids who stay up later and later, I'm getting almost nothing done. And so, but I Googled how to become an early riser. And sure enough, Steve Pavlina had an article on it written back in 2005 that was really cool. And so I've started getting up every day at 6:30 in the morning. I didn't even know that like 6:30 existed because I am totally a scrape myself out of bed at, you know, at 8:30 or 9 type person. I followed his article, which, you know, it's just called How to Become an Early Riser. We'll link it up in the show notes. Those are the only days now when I do that, that I'm getting to inbox zero. And if I don't do that, I'm finding that I never make it to inbox zero during the day. And what's a trip is when I get up at 6:30, my kids get up around 7, I only get an extra half hour. It's not even that much time, but it's incredibly productive. And I just zip through a huge list that without interruption. And so by the time I make my kids breakfast and by the time I actually get into the office and really start working, I feel like I've accomplished hours of work by that time, and it kicks off my day in a very different direction than if I scrape myself out of bed and, you know, drink a bunch of coffee just enough to make my kids breakfast, and then I get to the office and now I have to start with email.
Yeah, a lot of the kid duty in the mornings is split between my wife and I. For me, I think the splitting the email, try to do some of it before dealing with the kids and then doing more afterwards. I can't say I have a good sense of whether or not it helps. I feel like I get a lot of the unimportant emails out of the way, but I don't get any work done on the important ones. One of the other things that I guess I'll update people on is the Twitter strategy that I've been following. I'm up to about 1,650 Twitter followers at this point for my Audit Shark Twitter account. And I've started really zeroing in on security auditors and security specialists. And probably over the past, I'd say month to 2 months, I've started getting a lot more retweets and a lot more shares from the things that I've been putting out there. And I think that has to do with the fact that I've started interacting with these people who are involved in the security industry specifically, as opposed to just kind of blanket trying to find people on Twitter. So I think that zeroing in on the type of person who would be probably an ideal user for Audit Shark has really helped me bring those people in underneath the Twitter account and start those interactions. I'll talk a little bit more about my strategy at MicroConf, but you know, speaking of MicroConf, one of the things that we did for this year was we hired a conference coordinator.
That was like the best decision ever. I feel like it's been definitely less than half the work for me. I don't know, it's hard to quantify, but it's less than half the work that I spent on Vegas last year we're spending this year.
Yeah, I've taken a ton of stuff and handed it off to him as well. And a lot of it's just like the follow-ups with people and trying to get information and saying, hey, I need this. And they're just fielding the replies and everything. And I've been able to hand a lot of that stuff off to him. And that's been really, really helpful.
Yeah, I think the other thing is we did attendee talks last year, which is where attendees can pitch their talk, or they basically, you know, put it into a Google form, Google spreadsheet, and then we allow all the attendees to vote on those talks, and then we pick, I think it's the top 8. We may stretch it to 10 this year if we're able, but last year we did top 8. That whole process was extremely time consuming last year, and I was debating whether or not to do it again. It was really popular, and so he just allows us to make it a no-brainer, like, yes, we will do that, because it's not a matter of any more time off our plate. It's just a matter of him doing it. You know, it's us paying him to handle it. It's also nice. We have almost all the speakers locked down at this point. You and I are speaking. Ian Landsman from Userscape is speaking about slaying the customer support beast. And then we have Nathan Berry. We have Jesse Meacham from youneedabudget.com, who grew a software company from $0 to $4 million a year. It's a one-time purchase downloadable software, which is kind of a cool story. And then, of course, Heaton Shaw is returning, and Sherry Walling, PhD. My wife's going to be talking about, you know, stress, anxiety, entrepreneurship, mindset, that kind of stuff. So there's a couple more that are still maybes, and we're still working them out, but I'm hoping to get people dialed in here in the next week or two.
One of the things that I found interesting for the attendee talks was the number that we got this year.
It was 21 last year. 21 talks, and then we, like I said, we picked the top 8.
Well, we didn't pick, the attendees did.
That's right.
But then this year, what did we get? Like 42 or 43,
yeah,
something like that?
43, twice as much. Crazy, yeah. Ratio. Shows you what kind of crowd it is, right? It's people. I mean, our world, our audience in general, and just the folks we hang out with, our colleagues, we are makers, we're creators, and people don't just want to come and sit back. They want to participate, and they want to make, and they want to share as well. A lot of names I recognize in that list. I had a tough time voting because I wanted to vote for like most of them.
I did too.
You could do like a whole nother day of just short talks or something.
Right. Well, I had a conversation over Twitter with a couple of people about the sheer number of applicants. And the fact of the matter is that the people who come to MicroConf, you can learn something from just about everybody there. Yeah. So having that many people who want to get up on stage and share with everyone, I don't think that's a bad thing, because almost everyone there has something that they can share that other people can learn from, and you save themselves time or money or effort or make more money from their businesses.
So I saw you you put a nice little drip sign-up form on the podcast website.
Yes.
That was cool. I hadn't seen this, and I went to startupsoftherestofus.com, and I see the drip form there, and I'm like, how'd that get there?
You know, the funny part was that I actually had a hard time finding in WordPress where to put it.
Oh, we have a WordPress plugin. All you have to do is install the plugin and then cut and paste your user ID and it installs it for you.
I was looking for that, but the thing is, I have Drip installed on my blog, and I went over to my blog, and I'm like, I know that they've got a WordPress plugin, or at least I'm pretty sure that they did. But then, of course, if you go to install a WordPress plugin, then you should probably take a backup of the site, and I didn't want to do all that. I'm like, okay, where did I do this over here? And I looked, and unfortunately, it was buried in the theme itself, so I couldn't do that on that. Honestly, I've already forgotten where I did it. It was took me 30 seconds to do once I found it, but it took me probably 10 minutes to find it.
Nice. Don't do this at home, kids. Use the WordPress plugin.
So if you haven't had a chance to go over to the startupsfortherestofus.com website, go over there. There is a Drip campaign there. You can sign up for the podcast mailing list, where we'll keep people informed about, you know, anything that's coming up that relates to the Bootstrapper community, whether it's podcast or MicroConf or Micropreneur Academy related. We'll probably put some feelers out there. I mean, it won't be the primary MicroConf mailing list. I'll warn people now about that. But if there are things that are coming up, like if we're going to thinking about hosting another MicroConf or doing anything else, then being on that mailing list is definitely the place to be.
So last update for me, I reached a decision point a few weeks ago with Drip, and the decision was around where to go in the market, because Drip is at kind of in between, you know, something like MailChimp and AWeber, which are for autoresponders, they're like $15-$20 a month. And then on the high end, there's Infusionsoft, which is like $300 a month and up. And it's, from what I've heard and seen, it's quite complex. I've gotten a lot of requests that people want just a little more email automation, basically being able to move people in and out of lists based on things that they click in an email, and being able to say, well, if this person has clicked on this link, then now they're tagged, they have interest in SEO. And so then you can kind of funnel them into an SEO campaign. And then when they're done with that, funnel them back. It's just like, you know, I explained it, email automation. I mean, it's basically a stripped down version of like an Infusionsoft or maybe an Office Autopilot. And so we broke ground on that feature, and it changes the direction of Drip a little bit. It doesn't change direction as much as it expands it. Like, we still have the front end email capture, we still build the course for you, and we still have the split testing and the goal tracking, but we're now adding in this kind of behavioral and rules stuff, which is, I admit, it was not at all on my radar when I envisioned the product and wasn't on my radar while we were building it. And it's purely come about because of customer requests wanting something that does more. The interesting thing is, a lot of our customers are people, they're kind of two camps. It's either people who had never gotten an email course together because they just didn't want to make the time or hadn't spent the time to do it. And Drip's good for that, of course, because it's fairly simple to get set up and we build that first course for you. But then there's also some experienced marketers who wanted the split testing and they wanted the email capture form and all the settings and stuff. And for those guys, we have a bunch of integrations, you know, that go out and keep it into their main email software. So they're using other email software and other marketing software, and then Drip is just kind of a front end for it. But with both groups, we felt the push to move more and more into automating. The beginners, now that they have a course up, are kind of like stoked that they have this thing going, and then they want to do more sophisticated things with it. And they want it to handle like trial emails, right, which require an automatic move in and out based on behavior, or customer retention emails. I mean, really moving through the space, because right now it's all about marketing emails. And then the more experienced people know the power of email automation. So that's where it came about. So it's definitely a huge undertaking for us. I bet it'll be a simple V1.0 is probably 2, maybe 3 weeks. And then, you know, expanding on that, it could be easily, it's 1 to 2 months of development. That's really where we are right now. And I'm feeling good about it. I mean, I'm feeling like it's going to expand the market substantially. And it also allows me to change the marketing quite a bit, right? The whole value prop of Drip changes at that point. It's not just this thing that increases conversion rate. It can actually do things that a lot of other tools aren't able to do. It easily answers that question, how is Drip different from MailChimp, right? Or AWeber, which we get quite a bit. And I have answers to that already, but it's kind of, if it's not already painfully obvious, then you've kind of made a mistake as a marketer, right? If you get that question, how are you different from X? If you get that over and over, then you're not doing a great job as a marketer.
One of the things that comes to mind when you were talking about that was essentially positioning yourself against the other products. And it sounded to me like you just hadn't really thought that fully through before you launched Drip. Like you knew in your head what you wanted Drip to do, but you didn't necessarily think about it in relation to some of the other products that were out there and how you were going to position yourself against them kind of once you got the product out there.
What's interesting is that I had thought it through and I made notes, and I specifically have pieces in the FAQ and I have pieces in the marketing, but I just don't know how many people get it there, because there's like these nuances. There's, well, there's split testing within sequences, right? And that's something you can call out, but is that enough? There's the email capture form on the front end, and there's that we track goals, you know, that we allow conversion tracking. And so you can see when someone hits your site for the first time, you can see when they signed up for your list, you can see every email they got and opened in a timeline, then you can see when they click on an email, and then you can see when they purchase from you. So it's, that's like pretty cool, right? As a marketer, I mean, that's something I've wanted for a long time. But some people, it isn't enough. I had thought it through, but I don't know that it resonated with enough people. And I think that's what's part of this whole, like, being a founder thing, is you just don't know what's going to resonate until you get out there and you take your best first stab at it. And the value props that I set out converted well early on, especially with the launch list. And since then, it's just been kind of eh. You know, it's not, it's obvious that I want this thing to grow faster than it is. That's where the decision point comes of like, do I figure out just a new way to talk about drip, or have I explored all of those? And do I need a real differentiator here that's going to, I think, set me really noticeably apart from the other competition?
It's more about, like, you know how you have mentally positioned the product against the other ones, but it may not necessarily be as clear to other people who are kind of on the outside looking in. Like, when you're on the inside, like, everything is perfectly clear to you, but other people, they only see what they happen to come across. So if they don't go look at your FAQ, then they don't necessarily see all those things, like the things that you pointed out, why it's different. That's what I mean.
No, exactly. And that's always our job as the founder. It's our responsibility to communicate that to those people, because they're the ones that are a cold prospect coming across your website for the first time. They need to understand that difference right away, or you're not doing a good job of it. And that's where I find myself.
Yeah, and I find myself kind of in the same position with Audit Shark. There's definitely better messaging that I need to be doing. And, you know, I'm just in the process of figuring some of that out right now.
Very cool. You have anything else for this week?
I guess one last thing. Remember how I put together that auto-generated content strategy a couple of months ago?
Yeah, I do.
In December, things were, it was a little off. I wasn't quite sure how things were playing out, and the traffic was up, but I wasn't necessarily sure how much it was up. I kind of wanted to wait a little while till I got a little bit more data, but at this point, I can definitively say that based on the traffic alone, my traffic is up about 2.5 times over what it was in November. So it's just ridiculous the amount of extra traffic that I'm getting from all these long tail keywords based on all that auto-generated content. And I put there's probably about 900 to 950 pages of additional content out there. And if I go through and I look in Google Analytics, I mean, I can see that a lot of those pages are getting hit, and they are very, very well-targeted keyword terms that are coming in for those things.
That's awesome. And to be clear, when you say auto-generated content, it's not like a computer spitting out garbage. I mean, it's actual data in a database that you're using to create long-tail pages that have information about very specific topics.
So just to give you an example, one of the pages actually has people who are looking for the time in seconds before the screensaver grace period expires. And I actually have a page on my website that it pertains specifically to how to do that and tells you what registry key needs to be tweaked in order to toggle that. And, you know, there's people who are hitting that page and coming to my website specifically looking for that. And there's just like literally hundreds and hundreds of different searches that are hitting my site for all of these long tail things. Now, I don't expect most of them to translate into customers, but what I am seeing is I'm seeing that on certain pages, they're coming in and they're seeing the site and then they're signing up for the mailing list, which is, it's kind of nice to be able to correlate those pieces of data, because then I can say, okay, well, if people are searching for X, then they are more likely to join the mailing list. And maybe I should do a little bit more to try and push them towards it there, because maybe they're a good fit for the product. Maybe they're not. I don't know. You know, that's something I need to explore.
Right. You know, with all this long tail traffic, I don't know if you've looked at Hittail yet recently, or if you've linked it up.
I have not activated the Google keywords yet, but
you should do it. I activated it for drip because I didn't have an account for it, because it, you know, it didn't make sense to have it before I got this stuff out. And it was really enlightening. I definitely recommend you get in there and check it out. Go to the suggestions tab and then order by, you know, 5 stars at the top. It's pretty cool.
I definitely have to go in there and activate that. And after we get off the podcast, I'm definitely going to go in there and take a look to see what it says. The other interesting thing that I find is that I'm actually getting a lot of traffic from Bing.
If that's the case, then you will want to install the Hittail tracking snippet on it, because that will still work, you know, for Bing and Yahoo and all those. And obviously Webmaster Tools will work just for Google.
Yep. Well, I think that about wraps us up for the day. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsforthestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsforthestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.